fettered mind.
How do you work with the practice instruction, do nothing? What would life be like if you could experience fully whatever arises? And if objects and experiences are empty, if there is no self, what does it matter what you do? Hello, I'm Ken MacLeod. Welcome to this 9-part recording of a retreat based on Dzogchen, in which we explore just these questions. The retreat also touches on sky gazing, guru yoga, and other practices. And now, part 1 of Buddhahood Without Meditation. Okay, so the schedule is 5 o'clock, wake up. And the official retreat time is 8:49 right now. This is to prevent, as we had last time, somebody banging the gong at 4:45.
So 8:49?
It's now 8:50.
No,
it's not atomic clock.
Do you have a second?
Pardon?
It's not atomic clock.
No, I don't have a cesium clock. 850.
This clock is you can use for timing too, so it's set at the same time.
Yeah. I actually like to have that up here while I'm talking, so I can see how late I'm going. No, I've been all right tonight. You laugh hard. So we wake up at 5. The Han is a 15-minute gong. This is a traditional gong, not only in the Zen tradition, which is where we've taken it from, but it was used, Kala Rinpoche's monastery used a wooden gong to call people to evening ceremonies. It's used in the Thai tradition. The wooden gong goes way, way back. So the gong, when you hear it, you'll hear there'll be about 7 strikes at about a minute apart, and then you'll hear something like this. Which we call a roll down. And then after that you'll hear 1, which signifies that was the first roll down. There will be 3 roll downs, to be first 7 minutes, then 5, then 3. You should be prepared in your meditation by the end of the second roll down. Now, the first period of meditation, which goes from 5:30 to 7, right? Yeah. You can meditate here with everybody, or you can meditate individually out on the deck in your room, whatever. Where you meditate is optional. At 6:45, there will be another Han, another 15-minute, which is signaling the start of group meditation. And so everybody should be here by the end of the second roll down of the 6:45 Han. Is that clear? And then we do half an hour of meditation together, followed immediately by the morning rituals, morning ritual prayers. After which we go to breakfast, and then the next meditation period is at 9:30, so there is a gong at 9:15, or starts at 9:15 and goes to 9:30. And that signals the meditation period from 9:30 to 12:30. Now, I'll go through the rest of the schedule. 12:30 is lunch. At 1:45, there will be another Han, which is preparing for the meditation, which will start at 2 o'clock and go to 4:30. We have a half-hour break from 4:30 to 5, we have tea, etc. And we meet here at 5 to do evening ritual until 5:30. That evening ritual will be signaled by a gong. That's right, isn't it, Claudia? Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that goes from 5:30 to 6. At 6 we have dinner. And then there will be a gong at around 6:45 or so, signaling for teaching, which starts at 7. Teaching goes from 7 to about 8:15, depending on the evening. We may end a little earlier or a little later. After, we take a short break and then meditate from approximately 8:30 to 9 together here, at which time everybody either goes to bed or goes off to individual practice, whatever they want. Now,
5:30.
If what you just said doesn't agree with what's on this piece of paper, which should we believe the paper?
Yeah,
5:30 rather than 6. We come here 5. Evening.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, that's right. Your evening rituals at 5 to 5:30. Sorry, and then dinner's at 5:30, and then okay. I thought something was wrong.
Yeah, group practice in the evening is 8:15, according to the paper.
Well, yeah, according to teachings before that, and so
7
till, and when the teaching stops, we take a break and then start group practice.
Okay.
Sometimes I've been known, or questions have gone till a little bit later.
Really?
Yeah. I know some Canadians who ask a lot of questions. No, it's not your problem. Now, there are two reasons why the schedule is as unstructured as it is. One, you're all adults. The very strict Zen Sesshin schedules, where if you moved you got beaten and so forth, particularly in the Rinzai tradition, that form developed because the Rinzai school, and to a lesser extent the Soto school, their monasteries ended up being the prep schools for the sons of the samurai and the aristocracy. And so they had to do something to keep these young whippersnappers disciplined and adhering. And of course, they couldn't possibly treat them any differently from anybody else, so everybody is subject to the same discipline. That's how that evolves. I remember Dejan Rinpoche teaching, when he was teaching this shamatha practice, saying in Tibet, when they were being taught meditation, they were seated on benches, and a string was strung down the length of the bench, and they all were to be positioned, so that their noses just touched the string. And every time the string moved, they all got beaten. And then he leaned forward and said, "This is not how you learn to meditate. This is how you learn to sit still." Our interests are in meditation. So in Dzogchen, and really any direct awareness practice, suppleness of mind, which goes very, very much with suppleness of body, is extremely important. So not only your adults, you can regulate your practice yourself. Some of you may prefer to practice in a group. Others of you may prefer to practice individually, and you're free to find a place outside. I think because of the conditions, the chiggers aren't going to be such a problem as they were last year. But if you do, I suggest you take a ground sheet so you aren't sitting right on the grass. And a lot of people have spent a lot of meditation time meditating outside. We'll also be doing sky gazing, which is actually best done outside. I'll say more about that tomorrow evening. Other people, you know, will sit out here or out on the deck. There will be some kitchen noise. We'll keep this door closed. There's the one big advantage of this room, which is very important in our last retreat, is it's air conditioned. And we can regulate the temperature here. So particularly in the afternoons, this is often a cooler place to be. And in this room, the format of the meditation will consistently be a half-hour sitting, each of the Qigong movements done 3 times. We need someone to lead that.
You can do it at 9:30. I'll be here at 9:30. 9:30 to 12:30 tomorrow.
Yeah. You're familiar enough with the movements. Okay, that's great then. Good. So thank you. And when you get tired or if there's a problem with that, let me know. I'll find somebody else. Okay. Art, you know the movements, don't you?
Yeah.
Gary, how are you? No. Oh. Gary's fine. He's fine. Okay. Just come for class tomorrow. I'll check you out. Okay. Anita, you know the movements. Okay. Mm-hmm. So we've got people who can do this. Alicia, do you use this in your group? Okay.
Too small, space.
Yeah, it is a bit small, isn't it? Yeah. Okay. If you meditate for a while with the group and then feel, I don't want to meditate, they ask you to wait until one of the half-hour sessions is over so you aren't coming and going during while everybody is sitting. And then just leave quietly, close the door, that will be fine. And if you want to come in, then try to... You can listen for the gongs, because there'll be a small bell. Can you ring the small bell so they know? Mm-hmm.
What's the one it means?
Pardon?
This one.
Yeah, that's right. That signal.
30 to 40 minutes.
Yeah, okay. In that range. But the idea here is, and some days you may, and I can't meditate today, and go for a walk. So you can walk up the hill or walk down along the road, which is easier. It's one of the reasons why I like this place, because it's very open and it's relatively isolated, so you're not going to run into a lot of people. But sometimes just going for a walk is a great way to refresh body and mind, so both can really rest. Anything else I need to add on that, Larry? Okay. For each of the meditation periods, the very beginning, oh yes, that's right. At the end of the hong, as I said, you should be in your place for meditation by the end of the second roll down. Immediately that the third roll down finishes, and the third roll down will sound like this. It'll sound like, and then there'll be three strikes. At the end of the roll down, there are two, and the end of the first one, there's one. Then the large gong, which is this one here, will be struck three times slowly, and then you do the refuge and awakening mind on page 7. No, sorry, not refuge. No, refuge in the four immeasurables on page 16. Together, whoever's here for the meditation, you do that together. And at the completion of that, the small meditation bell is rung three times to start the meditation period. And then at the end of the meditation period, the small meditation bell will be rung three times. And then you do the dedication prayers, which are dedication, good fortune on page 14 or 31. They're identical. Read those together, and then the large gong is struck three times. Yeah, it is a bit warm in here, don't we? Mm-hmm. Not quite sure why, just uncharacteristic.
Mm-hmm. Unusual.
Pardon?
It's unusual. Maybe say with the large gong to use the rubber or something like that.
Larry's quite right here. It's amazing what people do with these things.
Ah, there we go. See, the nala has a rubber end and a wooden end. If you hit it with a wooden end, it sounds like this. And we don't recommend that. It's a little jarring after a period of meditation. Hit it with a rubber end, it sounds like this. Now, if you hit it hard, this particular gong, it doesn't sound very good. So, you can hear that. But if you hit it softly, you can do it a little louder than that. then it has a very nice sound. So as with all of this, it's the same with the little gong, as with all of the timing things, the gong in front of before the end of sessions and the before teaching and the han itself, these are all when we're in silence, as we will be for most of the retreat, the only way people know what's going on is by these various sounds. So if you are making the sounds, please do it with attention, because everybody's depending on you. I remember one morning, I have no idea who it was, but they took that little gong, and they were going to make sure everybody woke up. So they were banging it, so I said that. And this went on for 15 minutes. You don't know who that was, do you?
No.
No? Okay. Maybe I should send out a note and ask.
So, Ken, just to clarify, because it's a little confusing, we haven't quite done it this way before. The person doing the timing is going to use both the large gong and the small gong.
Or it could be two different people.
Well.
The one who's timing the meditation sessions is going to use the small gong.
Okay.
It's just the initial one, the 9:30, for example, and then the 12:30 use the large one.
Yeah. So, as soon as the han is finished, that third roll down, then this is struck three times. Do the opening prayers for the meditation, and then three gongs to start the meditation session.
At 5:30 and at 9:30.
9:30 and at 2.
Not at 5:30.
And at 5:30 okay. and at 7. Not, at 7.
Right.
Yeah.
This complements the han.
Exactly, large. Yeah. It'll be fine after the first day or two.
I didn't have a sign-up sheet for the 7 o'clock at night, so...
To for the teaching? Okay, so...
We'll get some.
Okay.
On the sign-up sheet, how do you call each go?
No, the...
Well, that's why I say just... You know, whoever signs up to do it, we'll make sure somebody does that.
Yeah, we didn't have any sign-up sheets for this, but it all worked out.
Yeah.
I mean, whoever sits there doesn't. I think it was Nick and Leslie most of the time.
Yeah.
So.
And if you're the only person in the meditation room, then, you know...
Do the timing.
Just do the timing for yourself.
Yeah.
And do the Qigong, and, you know, because other people may come in and join you.
But that was never the case in the last retreat. There's usually quite a few people here. Because
yeah.
One person thought, I want to go meditate by myself, and he went out and found that place. And then he came back and went, there's no energy out there. He came back so he could participate with the group energy. Okay. I'm not going to be monitoring your meditation practice or anything like that. You're all here to deepen your practice, as you said, and I'm just making the assumption that you know how to discipline yourself and how to sense when you're out of balance and so forth. And that's one of the reasons for the daily interviews, is so that you have a chance to bring up any problems. And the subject matter for the interviews, the 10-minute interviews, can be summarized very succinctly. It's questions, insights, and challenges.
Say that again.
Questions, insights, and challenges that you're experiencing. So it's very much related to your experience of practice, what's happening. If there's emotional material breaking, which sometimes is happening in meditation retreats, that may come up as a challenge or an insight. If it's more elaborate or requires more history, or it's not actually related to practice directly, that's why the additional times have been set up, so that then you see Claudia set up a time. And that way I can have a longer conversation with you about what you're working with or questions that you have, and clarify that so that we can create the conditions for your practice. The other reason for the very unstructured approach is that direct awareness techniques, one's ability to practice them effectively rests to a very, very high degree on your ability to rest. How many of you have heard the fairy tale of the princess and the pea? This is a very important fairy tale for this retreat. The princess is testing who's a real princess, and so a pea is put under this 100 mattresses, and this one woman comes in and she complains that she couldn't sleep all night because the mattress, the bed was so uncomfortable. Well, that's the quality of resting that you're aiming for. You're resting that deeply in your experience, so that rather it may not be all nice and smooth, and as people said in the last retreat, they would say, coming in black and blue. this isn't, this subject matter of this retreat isn't working on that stuff per se. This is not like taking and sending or the four immeasurables or power practices and these other retreats that many of you have done with me. We're not working on that material. But the practice consists of ultimately of finding peace and clarity in those experiences. But the only way that that becomes possible is to come in touch with those experiences, and that's only possible if you actually rest and rest very deeply. So I'm going to be putting a lot of emphasis on that resting quality. Now, the subject matter for this retreat is this book, Buddhahood Without Meditation, which I think I mentioned in the write-up on the website for the retreat. I think I did, didn't I? Yeah.
What's the name of that?
Buddhahood Without Meditation. Now, an apology is due for me, and I do apologize for not sending out a note sometime in June or July saying, you know, buy this book and read it, bring it to the retreat, etc. And the main reason for that, I was quite ill in June, and a lot of things just, I didn't really start getting a clear head until about the middle of July. As a consequence, how many people have copies of this? So we've got a good number here. I've just ordered 3 from Amazon. They should be here in the middle of the next week. They may even be here by Monday, but I expect them to arrive Monday or Tuesday. It isn't absolutely necessary. Well, actually, it isn't necessary at all, because as I've been rereading this book, It's very clear to me that the way that I'm going to teach this retreat is to translate this book, even though it's in English, into a form that's actually usable. One of the characteristics of the Tibetan tradition, to paraphrase something Stephen Batchelor said, in its institutional forms, Buddhism provides very powerful answers to questions of the spirit. But sometimes the power of those answers overwhelms the stammering voice that asks the questions. And what I find, when I was reading this and when I read many, many Tibetan texts now, is that Yes, these are very powerful answers to certain questions, and the questions are never named. So I have to play like Jeopardy and come up with the questions. And I'll just give you an example, which is where we'll be starting in the retreat. How many of you have heard the phrase, the self of the individual and the self of phenomena? It comes up frequently in discussion. Or the ego of the individual and the ego of phenomena, sometimes translated that way. Those are answers to two questions. And the two questions are, what am I and what is life? Those are candidates for the question. We never see those questions asked in the Tibetan tradition, or very rarely. All you hear about is the non-self of the individual, the non-self of phenomena or experience. So this is what I intend to do, and is to present a number of questions for you to sit with. Now, sitting with questions, these kinds of questions, is very different from trying to answer them. And this is extremely important in terms of practice. If I ask you the question, or if I ask you to ask the question of yourself, what am I? What happens, Anita? When you ask that question, what happens in you?
I go through a few answers that I know are, that my brain automatically...
Yeah, the world.
You know?
Yeah.
That's not it.
Then?
And I might have a moment of blankness.
And then what happens?
And then I have confusion.
And then what happens?
And then I know I don't know.
Okay. So this is typical. When we ask these questions, like, what am I? What actually happens is that as soon as we ask that question, we look directly at what we are. And what do you see? Anita?
Well, on one level, nothing.
Yeah. And we see nothing, because that's the truth. Now, how long do we stay with that nothing? Yeah, it can be measured in milliseconds. Mm-hmm. And then we panic, then we fall into confusion, and then we come up with a whole bunch of answers in our intellect. And if we go through this process again and again. The main aim of this retreat is to create the conditions, both through the structure of the retreat here, the meditation practice, teachings, etc., so that you learn to be able to rest in seeing nothing until you actually know. This is highly challenging. Your intellect is of dubious use in this retreat. there's a certain things to be understood, but most of them aren't that difficult. But a tremendous number of people unable to see try to compensate for that by trying to understand, and it just doesn't work. So a very large part of this retreat is devoted to the practice of doing nothing, so you can rest. Now, how many of you have done nothing for any extended period of time in your life? Well, yes, you were at a retreat a few years ago. So say a word about that.
It's really hard.
Well, yeah. Something keeps coming up.
You know, how many of you have a our old friend, the Protestant work ethic? Or the Puritanical work ethic, or whatever. Okay. It takes a real beating in these retreats. Well, of course, it doesn't take the stuff lying down. and you will be faced with such wonderful sentiments as such as, I'm not getting you anywhere. Or, how do I know that I'm doing it right? On that note, I will read this excerpt from Rangpung Dorje's fifth instruction. You don't need to worry or think, is this really Mahamudra? Let go of any hope that it will get better or any fear that it will get worse. And it's not so easy. So, this is why we have relatively large blocks of meditation in which, or practice sessions, I hesitate to call it meditation actually, there are practice sessions in which, and this is the principal instruction for this retreat, you do nothing. Carolyn?
What's the difference between that and meditation?
Well, there are a lot of forms of meditation. You can focus on the breath, you can rest in pristine awareness, you can meditate on four immeasurables, you can meditate on death and impermanence. So meditation covers a whole range of activities. In this, you just sit down. That's it. Do nothing. Now, for most people, this doesn't last very long because these thoughts come up in natural body sensations arise and they start trying to manage them. That's now you've started to do something. Four?
So if you're saying meditation, you really mean do nothing.
I really mean do nothing. And now, some of you may find that that is simply impossible. Okay, so that's where you start, and we work with that. And that's another reason for the interviews. You know, it's like, well, can't I even calm my mind by watching my breath first? Can't I even calm my mind by watching my breath for a while?
You're saying we don't even do that?
Well, this first day...
Now we're getting to it.
Well, that's very much what goes on in this. Now, this first day of the retreat is a little different. So, but all of you have traveled a significant distance to get here. And there's most of us leave behind relatively active and stimulating lives. So, this first day of the retreat, yeah, just do resting practice in the way that you are familiar with it. Tomorrow morning, from breakfast to lunch. And then tomorrow afternoon, you have off to do whatever you want. That is, if you want to go for a walk, if you want to go to sleep, just whatever it is, because I've consistently found, particularly when people travel to a retreat, that if they can just take that afternoon off and just rest and get caught up with all the travel and stuff, then they can really be here for the rest of the retreat rather than trying to play catch up for 9 days. the only thing we'll be doing in the afternoon is the Han lesson. Hopefully have four or five people at least come learn that. And the Qigong, if you aren't familiar with the Qigong, please come at 3:30 and go over that, because that's an important part of this retreat practice. It helps to keep balance energies in the body so that it makes it actually easier to do nothing.
One thing we didn't say is that the Han lesson will be out by the Han.
The Han lesson will be out by the Han, that's correct.
Where is
it? You'll see it's standing out sort of opposite the parking lot.
Oh, okay.
Well,
that
that's the Han, yeah. So we'll be observing silence from the end of teaching this evening until the end of lunch tomorrow. And then, as I say, tomorrow afternoon is completely open. And that'll continue. We have dinner together, and then in the teachings. And then after teaching tomorrow night, we will practice silence for the rest of the retreat up till Friday, approximately. The practice of silence is extremely important. In this kind of practice, because one of the ways that we discharge energy, one of the ways that we dissipate attention, one of the ways that we get away from our experience is by talking. So I'm going to ask you to practice silence, even in your rooms, even if you're rooming with your partner. Don't talk. With the cleanup, there may be a certain amount of functional talking that's necessary, but you limit that to asking the essential question, and if you're giving the explanation, you're straight to the point. You don't go into a lot of elaboration, so it's really like one sentence kind of stuff. And only if it's absolutely necessary. And after the first two or three days, that'll be worked out. Yes.
One thing that worked when Frank and I were rooming, because she hikes mountains a lot, is we put a piece of paper in our room, and if one person was leaving to do a hike and needed to notify the other person, they just put a note down and when they were expected to return, and
yeah.
That way it didn't involve. Because it's hard once you start talking in the room to shut it down.
Yeah. And it's also the reason Claudia said earlier that if it isn't time critical, then slip her a note. This allows both of you to continue to observe silence. If it's an emergency, somebody's twisted an ankle or something like that, then you say to Claudia, so's twisted an ankle, etc., and then she'll take the necessary steps to manage that situation. But the practicing silence is going to bring you in touch with your internal material, roughly increasing the experience of it by a factor of at least 10. And that's good for purposes of practice, because there's a whole bunch of stuff you won't be dissipating through talking and exchanges with other people. So that's something that will make a very big difference. And again, in these retreats, I just refuse to treat people as children. This is the practice and the discipline and the framework that I would like to provide. Whether it actually happens is entirely up to you. So you create the framework. I'm not the kind of person who stations people with sticks and whips and monitors and police and things like that. I think this is something we create together. But it is very, very helpful. Whatever the case, there is absolutely no talking in this room, ever, except for the teaching periods. Before or after teaching periods, or before evening rituals or anything like that, or trying to find a quiet place. You don't use this room, so that this room is always open for people to practice, and there will be no disturbance in it. Anything else I need to cover on that?
No. In the past, you told us to keep our formal practice at the first session.
Thank you for reminding me of that. Many of you will have practices that you are doing on a regular basis. Take one of the meditation sessions. It doesn't have to be the first one, but take one of the half-hour sessions and do your regular practice so that you keep that going during the retreat. Outside of that, then you're going to just rest in your experience. And sometimes resting in your experience isn't very restful, as some of you know already. But that's the practice. As we go on in the retreat and through the interviews, I will be helping you to shape your practice so that it is effective and productive. But this idea of letting go, of working a technique, is actually very, very important in both Mahamudra and Dzogchen. It's particularly important in Dzogchen. It's quite possible to work various techniques so you create very specific mind states, and this, there are many forms of training which do this, and they're very helpful, very powerful for bringing out certain kinds of experience. But what we're really focusing on here is creating the conditions so that you find the nature of experience in experience itself. And for this, the quality of resting, which, as we'll talk about as we go through the retreat, matures into the quality of resting and seeing. But the way that we're approaching it here is that's going to be a natural evolution. So have I made this clear enough? Are there any other questions about it? Gary, do you want to add anything from your experience with this? No. Okay. Anything else? I think I
just remind people to do the sign machines before they leave tonight.
Yeah. Okay. So I think that's everything I wanted to cover this evening. Yes,
there are restrooms in this building.
There's one right here. This door is a restroom right here. There's one on the other side of the kitchen. Just go past where the bulletin board. There's a door on the right, and there's a bathroom right there.
Any other questions? Okay. Good night. Yes.
So the person leading the meditation or ringing the bell in this room is not necessarily responsible for doing the Qigong.
No.
Somebody figured out how many sign-ups we're supposed to do per day or something?
Total, it's between 3 or 4. 4 would more than cover 3.
For 10 days.
It might take 3 or 4.
There are
42
blanks in 20 people.
So if you sign up for 3, and then you can see if there are any blanks, and then sign up for another one. Okay, I think that's everything. Back there, question? There are 18 people.
May I ask a question about the kitchen duty? Is it primarily cleanup? Do we do any food?
It's all cleanup.
Okay. The cooks take care of all the food part. Okay. So, get a good night's sleep. See you at 7 o'clock.
Unfettered Mind retains all rights to these podcasts. If you do wish to use a part or a whole podcast, please send an email to podcasts@unfetteredmind.org.